They're starting a couple of seconds, though. Vice chair is on her way in. Welcome, everyone. I'm Steve Cassano, co-chair of this committee. To my left is Auden. She's the co-chair from Bridgeport, and Bill's subcommittee ranking member of the of our committee. So the three of us are kind of excited about this. This is an issue that has been before the Planning and Development Committee for several years. And it is clearly a challenge. As we looked around the state, there are probably more than 100, probably closer to 160 municipalities that have varying, various blight ordinances. And, of course, none are the same. Good old Connecticut, would you expect anything different? 169 principalities. And so we have a challenge before us. And that's why we are assembled. And quite honestly, we have had several discussions on how to approach the challenge. And so what we're going to do to begin is I'm going to start with Auden, going to my left. I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourself, who has appointed you, why you volunteered to even be here to accept this challenge, and some ideas you have in a couple of minutes, so that'll help us think of future meetings, and then we'll talk about some of the things we're talking about potentially doing as a part of the process. So, Auden, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Representative Auden Grogans. I represent the 129th District in Bridgeport, and I am honored to be appointed by the committee and the Speaker of the House to serve on this this task force, which I think is really... It really is going to deal with an issue that I think is so critical in Connecticut, and I know it's critical to my city, which is a very big city, the biggest city in Connecticut, Bridgeport. We have so many blighted properties on some blocks, some areas of the city. There's blight on every block, so I think it's really critical. I'm honored to serve with Senator Cassano, who I've also served with on the Planning and Development Committee, as well as Representative Amon, and I look forward to working with all of you, and I'm really, really excited to address this very critical issue in cleaning up Connecticut, and as well as focusing on individual cities and towns. I want to not only focus on potential legislation in expanding our blight laws, but I want to focus on enforcement of those, you know, the aspect of enforcement, because we do have some legislation that we have passed over the years to expand the opportunities for cities and towns to address blight, but we also have to be able to have those cities and towns be able to enforce that legislation. So, again, I look forward to working with all of you. And turn it over to our next speaker.
Hi, my name is Pam Elko. I'm a partner with the firm of Robinson & Cole. I'm resident in our Stamford office. I got my letter from Larry Caffaro, so I'm guessing that's who appointed me. I'm actually a partner in the environmental practice group, and I do a lot of work with brownfields. The City of Bridgeport is actually a client, and I do a number of projects in the City of Bridgeport and other municipalities around the state. And when I was asked if I would be interested in doing this, to me, I'm coming at it from probably a slightly different perspective than a lot of people, but I think there might be lessons to learn from the brownfields efforts. I am happy and eager to help, learn, and offer whatever assistance and thoughts I can on this. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. My name is Raphael Podolsky. I'm an attorney with the Legal Assistance Resource Center, which is part of the legal aid programs. I was appointed by the Speaker of the House as a representative of residential tenants. I come to this certainly from the perspective of residential tenants. I was myself, however, many years ago an anti-blight officer for the City of Hartford, so I feel I have some sense of at least one way that the anti-blight ordinances were being used at one particular point in time. Obviously, I'm interested in what the conditions of properties are. I'm interested also in what goes through the entire through neighborhood impact when you have blighted buildings. Often where there's been an abandonment, not merely a physical abandonment of the property, but an abandonment of responsibility by the owner. You see a whole range of situations, you know, from the foreclosure process on down, where it's important to figure out how to prevent blight from deteriorating a neighborhood. So I'm interested in all those areas and hope maybe I can bring a little bit of expertise on some of the statutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Rosario. I'm the Director of Anti-Blight and Illegal Dumping for the City of Bridgeport. I was nominated by Senators Williams and Ayala. I also would like to thank Representative Grogan. She's been on the cutting edge and a big force helping us on the enforcement level for the City of Bridgeport, addressing blighted issues. I'm glad to share some of our many successes. Just tomorrow, we've harbored a really good relationship with Bank of America. We got them to take a dilapidated building, donate it to an abutting owner, and give them $30,000 to rehab it. So we want to share some of those instances where we can be of help and share many challenges and see how we can address that going forward.
Good afternoon. My name is Lieutenant Dan Lauer. I'm the head of the Waterbury's Blight Task Force. I'm the appointment from the CCM appointment to the task force. You know, Waterbury, like many of the other old mill towns, we've faced a perfect storm in recent years of deteriorating housing stock, absentee landlordism, the stagnant economy has also been a drain on things. You know, we haven't had the investors coming in like we had in the past. And we believe right now the biggest issue facing us is foreclosed properties or banks sitting on properties for sometimes years at a time and not moving on them and us having to chase our tails and trying to get properties taken care of to the level they should be. You know, we were up here at the state 2 years ago. We worked very closely with Judy Dicene, Representative Berger, and the other legislative members to pass the criminal aspect to the blight ordinance, which was we've been using effectively now in Waterbury for the past year, where we issue you a summons directly to housing court as opposed to a civil process. And we've had some great success with that, through the work of Judy Dicene, who's also here with us today. Again, I'm here just to learn, see what other agencies are doing, how we can work together on making things operate. Our biggest thing in Waterbury is if we don't see a dime, that's not what our thing is about. We're worried about getting the places cleaned up, you know, enticing new business to come into the city, and just improving the quality of life for everyone in general. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob DeCosmo. I'm the residential landlord representative on the committee, appointed by Senator Don Williams. And I'd like to share my experience with the committee members as a property manager and a developer of urban rental properties for the past 30 years. I'd like to see us work on a uniform definition of blight so that we understand from one city to another what to expect. And I'd like to make sure that we come up with ways to encourage new capital investment in our cities and make sure that we don't discourage investment for private capital to come into some of these more challenged neighborhoods. And I look forward to working with everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Kevin Soley. I was appointed by Senator Martin Mooney, and I am the representative for the International Council of Shopping Centers. I'm actually a civil engineer by trade, and I've had the privilege to actually work in several municipalities around the state with both new shopping center developments and also redevelopments of centers where stores have gone, storefronts have gone dark, and there was a redevelopment opportunity there. So I'm very excited and honored to be here and to represent the shopping center industry.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rich Gentile. I'm Assistant Corporation Counsel for the Town of East Hartford. And I was invited to serve by Representative Jason Rojas. East Hartford, like many of the towns and communities here, face similar problems with some of the decaying property, both residential and commercial. And we're very interested in talking about a standard property maintenance code that's adopted throughout the state, so that will eliminate confusion. We're interested in talking about more state oversight in the way of administering and interpreting and even handling appeals for property maintenance code. We think that the various notice requirements need to be streamlined. It's very difficult often to find who in fact owns properties, who in fact has liens on property. And even if it is not overly difficult, it's time intensive to go down and do title searches every time you have an issue with a property. We face a number of folks who, unfortunately, there seem to be frequent flyers, so it's always one or two properties that are always problematic. And some of that, the bigger picture, is that some of these folks have lived in our community for many years and just don't have the money anymore to maintain their properties in accordance with the property code. So we're also interested in seeing if there are ways that everyone collectively, whether it be working with banks or otherwise, can help fund some of the simple improvements that we think could eliminate some of the blight. And we face the same problems that everyone faces with banks in the foreclosure process, which is it is such a long process. And while we understand the liability issues for a bank taking action, it's very difficult once a foreclosure is commenced. Often the property is vacant, and the grass grows, and the trash accumulates, and it's always a question mark of who goes in, who cleans it, can you lien it, how do you get paid back. That is an issue for us in the way of, is it possible to change statutes to say, compared to what they say now, which is basically banks don't have any responsibility, can banks somehow get that responsibility if they have a mortgage and if they're foreclosing for simple health and safety maintenance? So thank you. I'm excited about this group.
Gave you a lot of flexibility.
Thank you. Those towns where they pay their taxes are fortunate. Right side.
I am Bill Lehman. I'm the ranking member of the Planning Development Committee and represent the town of South Windsor as a state representative. The problems that are put forward, and I've learned more about blight in the last few years on the Planning Development Committee than I ever thought I was going to, but I go back to when I was mayor of South Windsor and we passed a blight ordinance. And the problem we had as a smaller town doing it, it was relatively expensive for us to do it because there was no standard definition of blight, no standard set of ordinances out there that our town attorney could look to and say, oh, if you copy this one, you can pass it fairly easily and you'll know that it'll stand up in court. So it was almost reinventing the wheel as we started doing it. The other problem that we had is that when we had violators of our blight ordinance was to get any sort of court action on it. It wouldn't reach the criminal aspect that was mentioned. It was just lousy taking care of your property, and I have to sympathize with the courts who said, with all our cases, you're worried about the fact that the grass is overgrowing in front of a house. We'll put that at the bottom of our list. So that was a problem that we ran into as a suburban community of doing it. And to be honest, our enforcement of it has been very, very lax because unlike the cities where you don't even know who the property owner is, we ran more into the problem of the property owners just saying, you're not going to tell me what to do with my property, period. And so it's, a very, very different problem than Bridgeport is running into than South Windsor. So I would like us to see if we can come up with some sort of common definitions, suggested ordinances, and that our smaller communities that don't have staffs working on this can turn to and use your expertise and say, we can copy this. We know that if it goes, if we do go as far as court, it's not going to get thrown out because it's poorly drafted. And that's something that I would like to see happen. For us to come out of here not with something that maybe even a state law, but a suggestion to the communities that they could use if they wanted to, that CCM and Cost and the rest of them could pass on. So again, the problems are very different from varied communities, and looking forward to the discussion of them.
Thanks, Bill. And perhaps the most important person on this committee is sitting over here behind us in the corner. Peter, want to introduce yourself and tell us a little about some of the materials you have and contact and things like that.
Thank you, Senator. Peter Mrzewski, clerk of the Planning Development Committee, clerk of this task force as well. The material we have came from OLR today. If you have any requests or would like to present material to the committee anytime, please just email me. I'm sure everybody has it in the contacts we've been going back and forth. And yeah, just looking to get something done here. So thank you.
If you can't make a meeting, please let Peter know so we know. I have the opportunity to chair Planning Development, and as you've heard from some of our own members, this has been an issue that's been around for a long time. When I was mayor years ago, we developed our own blight ordinance, not addressed necessarily at the larger buildings, but at lousy neighbors, I guess is a blunt term. Who didn't bother to take care of their properties and so on. We were fortunate, though. Manchester at that time had a zoning enforcement officer. And with the zoning enforcement officer, he would go, he would give them the 15 days and so on. And generally, people complied. It really started from one house, and then others started to complain. And so that was, you know, my first introduction to blight ordinances. As we got on this committee and started to think, we've heard today already the terms urban and suburban and rural and so on. Do we try to look at it from that perspective, or do we look at it from a tri-perspective, maybe of residential, industrial, commercial? Maybe is that the way to go? Because clearly the situation for large abandoned industrial buildings is different than the guy who has 15 cars in his front yard that sit there forever. Totally different situations, yet all under this definition of blight. And as local officials, we've all had the
the difficulty of trying to define a blight ordinance that includes all of those. And it's somewhat impossible to do unless you have categories wherever it is. I'm not really sure how you can do that. It is important to try and do some regulation. And the question that people have of government all the time is, you know, how far do we go before we are at a point of over-regulation? How can you tell me what to do to my property? Well, you have I feel, and I think most of us here probably feel, we do have an obligation to our neighbors to chip in and make the neighborhood look at least decently. I think the comment by someone earlier about, you know, just the impact of the broken windows and so on and what that does is important. It's important in those large abandoned factory areas just like it is in somebody's small residential neighborhood. So there's a lot of similarities, and yet we can be looking at a building that has 1,000 units that's empty and a single-family home. It's still the same situation. What are the repercussions? Every time we pass a law in this building, there's some kind of a repercussion. And so one of the considerations we have to think about are, what are the repercussions? As we develop legislation, is it enforceable? Can we pass something that is sensible and enforceable? Or is it a feel-good? There are a lot of bills that are passed that I think are feel-good bills, that we can pass them and say, people, oh, that's really great, but can you enforce it? How do you enforce it? Auden's major concern. The out-of-state landlord. How far do you go to attach properties or to attach their own personal properties? Where do the legal ramifications come into this? And we have walls built in the system that protects those people, screens those people from actually being enforced. How do we deal with that aspect? Many of you have other questions like that. And what I like to do is throw those out and just think about some of these kinds of things. So we have an idea of how we might be able to categorize those and put them together. One of the things we've talked about already is our next meeting would be on the 29th. On the 29th, to have in maybe two groups of people that could have a real impact on us. Number one, the bankers. We did not, the bankers were not on this committee. It wasn't an oversight. It just, we thought they were going to be appointed by one, and it wasn't appointed. So the bankers aren't here, but that doesn't mean we can't hear from the bankers, and they're very willing to come in. The bankers have a big stake in this, and they impact our community in their decision-making. So the banking community might be an interesting point of view as to what it means for them and the way they do business and their impact. The second is the legal community. Maybe a couple of the larger firms that deal with this on it, and I think here Judy probably deals with this almost every day. And all of you probably have suggestions. If we bring in, we can bring in three or four of the bigger banks or something like that. What does it mean to the bigger banks? What are the bigger banks willing to do? How much can we team and partner to make something happen that makes sense? I find it ironic. I go. Some of you may know that we have a day called Stand Down Day at the Rocky Hill Veterans Home. Stand Down Day is probably my most depressing day in the legislature. We have each year, I've been now 4 years, almost 1,000 Vietnam veterans who are homeless come to Stand Down Day. They get dental care, they get legal care, they get housing advice, medical advice. It is, how can the state have 1,000 people in that situation? Here we got buildings that easily could house thousands of people if we ever got our act together and were able to get something that made sense. That we have people with no places to live and empty buildings. That's a bad combination. Can this blight ordinance have any impact on that? The other factor that is just as major in this whole process is that dirty little word called brownfields. Nobody wants the responsibility because of the brownfields. we do have municipalities have access to brownfields grants. I don't know how available or how much money is available to the private sector. Is there money there? Is there enough money in a tight year when there's no money? Should we be talking about spending money? But if we don't talk about the correct solutions, then we got a problem. I think we need to address the solutions the best way we can, and let those at the next level determine how those solutions could be implemented. But I wouldn't want to say, well, we can't bother to put that in there because we can't afford it right now. I don't think that does anything for us. We need to come up with solutions and ideas to make changes in this process. Those are some of the thoughts that we have talked about. And those are, quite honestly, those are the thoughts that led to the creation of this committee. Now, part of the discussion is, you know, we can meet forever. We don't want to meet forever. We want to meet maybe 6 or 7 times. We have a report due, actually, February 4th to the legislature. That's good, because we're under a deadline. So we set up a couple of dates, 10/29, which is actually a Tuesday, and then 11/19. I think it's a Tuesday, and then 11/19. 29th, who else? And I'm opening this up in a few seconds here. Clearly the bankers have to come in, and probably the banks, the bankers and the, who am I missing? The legal community, right. There are others that should come in. And then we'll need a public hearing. I want to have a public hearing. I'd like to have us have some feedback, some exchange, develop some kind of an idea before we have a public hearing, and then let the public talk about what they feel those concerns are. And then that'll give us, you know, we'll still have time for, probably going to have a meeting in December, sometime after Thanksgiving, probably quickly after Thanksgiving, hopefully, and maybe in the second week of December, and then we're not going to do, obviously, for the next 2 weeks there. And then we'll go into the second week of January, maybe 1 or 2 times. All of that, obviously, if needed. If we think we're still being productive, we may have thrown our hands up in 2 weeks because it's such a big area. So with that, I'm going to throw it out. Ideas, suggestions, comments, what else should be included here? How do you think we can make this a better committee? I want it to be our committee. It's not my committee. It's not P&D's committee. You're all on here because you all have a role, a way to help. It's our committee. And so if we're going to do it right, then we need your input. So with that, I'll leave it open. Just
And sort of in preparation for this, I sent out an email to the Connecticut Chapter of American Planning Association's members and asking them for input, and got a great response. Our town planners spent a lot of time thinking about these things and the zoning aspect of it. So I think they would be good to bring in some of them, and I think they also have a good network nationally in terms of best practices.
Yeah, the planners, I think, have been absolutely critical. I agree with you. Jody, you mentioned the potential statewide maintenance code or something. Are there other states that have codes?
Thank you.
And the major advantage to that is to, A, have state intervention with regard to blight violations and also uniformity, or those between.
Rich?
Yeah, and I was also going to say, to add to that, if you did adopt that, and obviously there would be Connecticut changes, it does not mean that a particular municipality might not also want to make a change or add on to it. I think that could be an option because, as you indicated before, towns are different. One town, South Windsor, is different than East Hartford or certain parts. So what might be considered blight in East Hartford might be considered quaint in another town. So I think that's an option as well. And just looking at it from a staffing point of view, not that we're here to say the state has any more money to create a staff. There is a staff in place, you said, with the building code. But you look at a town like East Hartford, where we probably have four or five people less between Corporation Council and our property maintenance area than we did just 5 years ago. And I'm sure that's similar to most municipalities, that there just is not the staffing to continually look at the blight ordinance and say, yeah, what does that mean again, and go forward and review it in that way. So it does bring you uniformity.
I had a suggestion. I believe we should also get some input from the Department of Mental Health and Social Services. I know one of the issues, main issues, Judy comes talks to our Casio group on a quarterly basis. We have our issues with our out-of-state banks. We have our issues with our out-of-town landlords. But we also have some issues where there's a problem. There's a mental health issue. And we can clean and lean. We can clean the property over and over again. And it's just not fair to especially if we have a landlord. You know, you have a landlord who has a tenant who has an issue, and it's not fair to them to keep getting penalized. Obviously, there's a new normal process they have to do to evict them. But I think we should somehow put some sort of language where the state DMS has to intervene.
I'd like to further that comment. From the landlord perspective, one of the problems that I don't hear people talking about except for that is we're housing tenants that don't have respect for themselves or their children or the property or their neighbor's property. And for us to create a solution, we really got to look at both sides of the equation. The property owner side, which we can lean and find. But we have a tenant problem, especially in the urban areas. And I know that we've passed a law back in 1996, Public Act 9674. And I don't think that's being utilized properly. And even if we're starting to, you know, encourage the use of this law, we've got to get the tenants to be more accountable for their actions. And the solution is not just to lean on landlord's property. But again, we've got people out there that are just destroying buildings and moving across the street and they're getting away with it and destroying it again. So I just want to make sure that we understand we've got to look on both sides of the issue with the housing, both the landlord and the tenant.
There are two things I want to mention. One is traditionally the anti-blight laws have been for vacant properties and the housing codes have been for occupied properties. And as time has passed, there's kind of been an expansion of the anti-blight concept to pick up occupied properties as well. And we may want to sort of look at what the relationship is between housing codes and anti-blight codes to the extent that the anti-blight codes apply to occupied housing. I think there are a number of process issues around that, and there may be some substantive issues because you really do respond differently to a situation where you have an occupied building, but when you're talking about it's essentially a vacant and possibly kind of quasi-abandoned or quasi-abandoned building. The second thing is I'm wondering if it's possible to propose a task for the Office of Legislative Research or for someone else, which is that you mentioned that a lot of towns have anti-blight ordinances, and one of the sort of assignments in the statute for us was for us to create model blight ordinances for municipalities. I don't know if we're really going to be able to do that. But I'm wondering if OLR could take that collection of anti-blight ordinances and do some kind of at least a partial comparison that would help us see to what extent they're similar and to what extent they're different. And just as an example, I know that one of the issues that people have is what does the word blight mean? What constitutes blight? It would be interesting I think it would be interesting for us to know how the towns that have blight ordinances have been defining blight. Do they have, are they almost all the same definition? Are they radically different definitions? So I'm just wondering if you might want to consider in any event asking OLR or some other entity to make some sort of a comparison, maybe even at only the surface level or on a couple of issues of the many municipal anti-blight ordinances, especially if they've collected them. I'm told they have.
Now, are you hiding way back there? Root, do you have any comment on that?
No, I don't. Someone else on the task force, maybe, because there's several anti-blight officials that are on the task force.
And, Ruth, I have a question for you. I noticed in your report, which you stated July 3rd, 2012, I think it was a response to my question with regard to the legality of buildings. And I understand we have a landlord here, a landlord representative here. But in my town, we have a lot of out-of-state landlords that just their properties aren't worth anything, so they continue to let them be driving regardless of the funds. Rosario can attest to that. And I wanted to look into, again, this is where the enforcement comes in, about enforcing. We can put as many blight liens on properties as we want, but they don't change if the landlord's out of state, if the property isn't worth anything yet. And these are empty buildings. they're not buildings where there's, you know, tenants that aren't inspecting the sites. We're talking about empty buildings. So I wanted to look into what avenues we can do to enforce some of these blight liens and actually get some results here to try to clean up the property. And I noticed in your report you had talked to a specialist. He was a professor of law, Frank Alexander at Emory University, and he did talk about the challenges in holding landlords personally responsible, meaning that you put a lien on their other assets other than the blighted property, and there are challenges in regards to that, particularly if they've incorporated and they're an LLC. But I did see that you made another suggestion in terms of adding unpaid blight fines to the owner's property tax bill. He seems like he was very knowledgeable. I don't know if we have anyone who's equally knowledgeable here in Connecticut or if there's any way of getting Mr. Alexander to attend one of our hearings. I know he's not on the panel. I need to talk on that.
Let me follow that up and go back to Judy. In your role, you must be dealing with the issues of the LLCs and the screens that protect people. How does it work? Thank you.
Not through the state yet, but we do have a civil process. So we have our independent hearing officers. They sit with the actual enforcement officers, and they come to an agreement with the fines. Just last week, we had a property that had a $76,000 blight fine assessed, and the property owner came in, said, listen, I'm willing to do this, and then they wrote us a check for $10,000 for blight fines. So. We want the properties cleaned up.
Thanks, Senator. Just to back up what Judy has said, you know, we in Waterbury, and some of the other guys have said here, we faced problems in Waterbury over the last few years with staffing, you know, with positions being cut. And we had a civil process in place, you know, a citation process, but we didn't have the backup to that. We didn't have a hearing officer. And I know a lot of these smaller towns don't have the staff either that would be able to facilitate that. So that's why we worked very hard to get this criminal asset put back into it. And it basically puts the person in court, and the court does the logistical aspect of it. So basically how it works, just in a nutshell in Waterbury, we get a blight complaint, an officer goes out, sees the violation, issues a notice of violation, giving, and the minimum is 5 days. We give them 5-day notice or up to however much we decide that we deem to get the property cleaned. If we don't achieve compliance, we issue a misdemeanor summons. Basically, if you got pulled over, you had a suspended license, if you got pulled over, you didn't have insurance on your car, you get a misdemeanor summons to appear directly in housing court, and the Judy Dicene or Patrice Palumba, who's another housing prosecutor, we actually hear the case. And that helps us out in Waterbury again, because we don't have the logistics to hear the cases. Cases are heard very quickly. If I cite somebody a notice of violation today, I have them in court in little as 10 days. And also send a message when you take a day off from work and go to court and sit before a prosecutor. I think it holds a lot more of sway than if you're just sitting in some conference room having some civilian hear your civil process. So that's one thing that we found very beneficial in Waterbury.
I have a question on the enforcement aspect. And I hear what Representative Roggins is concerned about. We also see that we have a lot of out-of-state property owners that have walked away or just came in here with the wrong mindset to start acquiring properties. Is there a procedural difference if we have to cross the state line to bring people into Connecticut to prosecute them for blight? Is there a way to streamline that process? That would be my next follow-up question. It's not your typical. Yeah, because we're concerned that they're actually mocking the process. And you can't touch me. We're in New York, and no one's going to serve us. And I think that's really hurting us as the community-based property owners.
Different housing courts have different criminal dockets. Some have a much busier docket. I would say, Judy, you should probably reflect on it and get back to the community. Judge Moran. No, he's in New Haven. He's in New Haven.
Senator, thank you again. I think you brought it up before. I think one thing we really need to look at too is the possibility of placing liens on properties of owners, their personal properties. And we do that now for relocations in Waterbury. If we have to relocate, but the problem is you have to reside, your other property has to be within the city of Waterbury. If we can find a way, I think, to send a message to the landlord, especially these out-of-state ones, if there's any way, and Judy, please correct me if I'm wrong or if you can add anything to this, find a way legally where we can say you live in, Sumpton Valley, New York, and you have a property in Waterbury or Bridgeport or whatever, and you're not taking care of your property, and you're thumbing your nose at us, hey, look, we're going to go slap a lien on your property in Happy Valley, New York, and send a message to you. I think that's something that we also need to explore and how we can do that, legally within the scope of the law.
Senator, one of the tools that we started doing in Bridgeport, actually borrowed from Mayor Menino up in Boston, we started doing shame ads. So we've had property owners that have dilapidated properties in Bridgeport. They live in Easton. We're running the paper shame ad in the Easton Courier. We've done that in Orlando. We've run it in the Connecticut Post. We've run it in the Haven Register. And you would believe the brother-in-law, sister-in-law call us up. Oh, they live in Florida. Here's the address. So that helps smoke them out. And then next thing you know, we get a call from the attorney. How can we make this right? Stop running the ads. So that's one of the things that we started doing in Bridgeport. And I encourage everyone else to do that. It's been successful for us.
just like what Judy said, we have a full-time detective assigned to our task force, and that's what he does. He finds landlords, and he's pretty good at it, you know. And so, again, I encourage that. I don't know how, in a lot of small towns, sometimes might rely on the state police, or as long as it has a criminal aspect to it, which most code violations do have, sometimes you can rise to the level of criminal violation. Most will be happy to help out, speaking for the law enforcement world in general. Oh, I mean, we're not looking for money. We're looking for compliance. But it definitely has been. Exactly. When you get a detective on the phone getting a hold of you, say, hey, this is Detective Hayes from Waterbury PD calling about your property, send a message. As opposed to, hi, this is, not to put anybody down, but, housing officer or code enforcement officer, police officer. I call, hey, this is Lieutenant Lauer from the Waterbury Police Department. I'm calling you to tell you to clean your property. It sends a message. I think that's where we're unique. We might be, and Judy would know better, I think we're the only municipality in the state of Connecticut where police officers do code enforcement. Well, very few.
Yes. Was there any discussion, and I'm, if I could, through the chair, ask Judith, was there any discussion on the $250 state fine, not 1,000, from 7148, expanding that to commercial properties? I mean, it seems to be tied to housing, pure housing blight. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems to be, confined to housing blight, which, I guess we've always been a little conservative on it, is housing versus the commercial side versus, residential, and you're not that. Okay. But, shopping centers, a shopping center or a, yeah. And I'm defining housing blight in that way. Right. Right. So a town. Yeah. Right. Right. But a town could adopt a housing blight ordinance under the general provisions or general powers and have that be broadly stated to include commercial shopping center blight, et cetera. Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I think I don't think it's that clear, and that might require a statutory amendment. I was looking at 7148 and 7148.0.
Yeah.
They both use the term,
housing.
As you pointed
out,
housing blight. Now, is the part of 7-148 authorizes towns to make and enforce regulations on housing blight. And my guess is the amendment to whatever bill created was focused on housing issues, and so they wrote it as housing blight. I'm sure if they'd thought about it, they would have just said blight.
We actually tried to get that changed in the last session. I don't know what happened to it. It just died.
Yeah.
We tried to say housing or commercial or just take housing out.
But it would seem to me that if that's an issue, with the that it would make a lot of sense and probably wouldn't even be that controversial to just take that limiting term housing out of those statutes so that covers any kind of, it covers the commercial industrial end as well.
Because it's great. It's a great tool. It's a great tool.
I'm just wondering if, in inviting people, we shouldn't try to, try to define what it is we want people to talk about. I'm just trying to put myself in the shoes, say, of someone from the insurance industry, and they're asked to come to a hearing on anti-blight laws. I would think they would want to know what is it we want them to talk about. Do we want them to talk about ways they would like the anti-blight laws changed, or do we want them to talk about? I'm not sure, and so I think it'd probably be helpful for any of the people that we're inviting to somehow frame what about the topic of anti-blight we're looking for from them. I think that will get us better information. And then the other thing is, in terms of a hearing, I think you have to presume that some of the members of this task force are going to want to ask questions to whoever testifies. So in figuring out how many people can reasonably be accommodated during one meeting, you got to put in more time, as you know well, from the public hearings generally, so that we don't end up feeling we don't have time. We brought a witness in, but we don't actually have time to ask the questions.
That's why we're going to have a public hearing.